You're listening to a special edition of Civic from the San Francisco Public Press and a mayoral press conference on the COVID-19 crisis for May 19th.
As of today, San Francisco has 2,179 confirmed cases of those who have been diagnosed with COVID-19. 62 people are currently hospitalized, and unfortunately, 36 people have lost their life. You can find out more information about this data and on our data tracker on our online, datasf.org/COVID-19, for full details. And I want to just kind of update all of you on a few things and get to Dr. Colfax and some important things that definitely need to be discussed. First of all, this past Monday, Dr. Colfax and I had a great conversation. Monday was yesterday, right? Okay. It feels like Monday every day. But yesterday, Dr. Colfax and I, along with Dr. Susan Phillip, had this great conversation about what it would take to reopen. And we talked about the indicators and the hospitalizations and a number of other things and the various phases. It was a very good conversation, and I think it's needed. What we found from that conversation are, of course, a number of questions, and many questions centered around when will we be able to get childcare open, summer camp, schools, and other things centered around children, because I know many parents are anxious to not just get a break from their children, but to get back to work and to get their kids involved in activities. And I know kids are anxious to play with their friends. And so this Friday at 11:30, I, along with Phil Ginsberg, who's the director of Rec and Park, and Maria Sue, the director of the Department of Children, Youth, and Families, we'll have a conversation around some of the options that we have available and what you can expect for the future. It will center around opportunities mostly for the summer and transitioning kids into, you know, a place where we can allow, in some cases, some summer activities. And we'll be able to speak more details about that on Friday and hopefully get to many of the questions that so many of the parents had. So we appreciate you all tuning in. We decided to cut back on some of the press conferences and really focus on the conversations with a lot of the leaders who are leading around public health, who are leading around support for children, youth, and families, folks who are helping us to make the decisions about economic recovery as we move in our new normal of COVID-19. This provides us with an incredible opportunity to really get to the heart of what is of most concern to the people of San Francisco and answer your questions so that you are able to make plans or arrangements as information is provided to you. So we know that it's been probably very challenging that we have not been able to provide you with specific dates or times around the things that you want to know the most. And as we have said before, this is a fluid situation and things can change at a moment's notice. But because most San Franciscans have complied with the orders, people have been wearing their mask, socially distancing themselves, and again, I say most people, I didn't say all people, but most people have complied. And because many people have taken this directive seriously, we have seen a decline in the curve. And that is something to be proud of. But our goal is to get rid of it entirely, and that's going to take continued work. Yesterday was the first day that shops were able to open for curbside pickup and some offering delivery. I stopped by Green Apple, a bookstore in the Inner Sunset, and they have another location further out. I was so happy to buy a book. I just didn't know what to do with myself. It felt good to go out to the community and to support this incredible institution. This past Friday, I picked up dinner at the Gold Mira. I stopped by, the garden center that's located off Sloth, and it just you know, to be able to support these businesses was really incredible. And I think that it's important. I know that we are all sheltering in place, going out to run errands and do essential things. But here's an incredible opportunity. We want to support our businesses, and this is a way that we can do that. So rather than making that next purchase on Amazon, maybe consider finding a place in your community and trying to shop, you know, at the local stores that may have availability for pickup and delivery. I needed a cord, and so I made sure that I checked in with the local hardware store. They didn't have the cord at the hardware store that I called, but I found it at another place. So I like the idea of making sure that we are purchasing things from businesses in our city that are able to offer those services. But I think it's going to take a lot more effort so that we can make sure that after we get through this hump, those businesses are able to open. They're not able to bring back their entire workforce. They still have to pay their rent and their bills and other expenses. It's been a really challenging time, even though we are raising private money and we're putting public money together and we're trying to support our small business community, and there have been a number of other initiatives. It's not always reaching the people who we know need it the most, because we still have, you know, our hair salons, our nail salons, our barbershops, our masseuse, people who do services that require direct contact with people. They are still not open, still not in business, and this is a really challenging time for so many people. So whatever we can do to support our local economy, our local businesses, I really want to strongly encourage you to think about supporting the businesses in your neighborhood and just maybe seeing what's available, going online and doing some research to see what's available to support small businesses in San Francisco. Another way that we're able to help some small businesses in San Francisco and help our seniors is through this Great Plates Food Program. And I'm really excited about this because we know that, first of all, when we first before we issued a shelter in place for everyone, we specifically asked that vulnerable population, our seniors and those who have underlying health conditions, to stay home. And what we found, of course, you know, there are some seniors, for example, who qualify for CalFresh, some seniors who qualify for Meals on Wheels and are lucky enough to have those opportunities. But there's a number of seniors who are just above that threshold. They may even own a home but are on a fixed income and can barely take care of themselves and barely take care of their home. And I do think it's important, regardless of whether or not you have the means, to make sure that all of our seniors are taken care of. And so this program is a program that partners seniors with local restaurants. And what we're able to do is provide three meals a day from local restaurants. So it not only helps support our seniors, it helps support our restaurants. And it provides a no-contact delivery. It makes it so easy for them. And I am so excited that along with all the other programs that are available, including the food bank, the San Francisco Marin Food Bank, Meals on Wheels, and a number of other initiatives and people who are doing it on their own, the fact that we have even another program that will provide food to our seniors and also support our restaurants is really great. And I want to thank Governor Gavin Newsom for his support for this program. I want to talk a little bit about testing because I know that comes up. The great news is we've come a long way. The fact is, if you are a San Franciscan and you exhibit one symptom, you could have a cough, you could have a temperature, call 311 or go online to sfgov.org and sign up, and you'll get sent to a testing center to be tested, any San Franciscan. But we also will test any essential worker, whether you are a San Francisco resident or not. If you're an essential worker in San Francisco and you don't exhibit any symptoms because you're on the front line, whether you're selling groceries or driving muni or out there as a paramedic, those are the people who are in contact with folks on a daily basis, putting their lives on the line to provide us an essential service. So we wanted to make sure that you know that testing is available for you. We've expanded the number of sites, and in addition to a site in Selma area, in the Western Addition, and the Bayview, and a few other sites scattered throughout San Francisco, we wanted to make it a lot easier for communities where we know testing is needed. We specifically announced a few mobile sites, including a mobile site in the Tenderloin, a site in Ocean Avenue in the OMI, the Lakeview area, and another site in the Bayview Hunters Point community. And the site in the Bayview Hunters Point community, the testing will be over the course of a few days, specifically in Hunter's View for but anyone from the Bayview is definitely welcome to receive a test. We did this in collaboration with a number of community-based organizations, similar to what was done in the Mission, because we know that there are high rates of COVID-19 in the Bayview Hunters Point community, and we know that people need access to testing. And we also understand that sometimes they may not call or they may not go online to figure out whether or not they should be tested. And we also want to make sure we detach the stigma associated with getting tested. And so on Friday, myself as well as Supervisor Shimon Walton, we will be going to the Bayview Hunters Point. We will be tested, and the goal is to show people how easy it is and to make sure that folks feel comfortable and they feel safe, that they can be tested whether they have insurance or not, whether they're documented or not. The more that people know they have access to testing and they feel comfortable when they exhibit a symptom or if they think they've been exposed, the better we'll be. And so our goal is to get to a certain level of testing in the city, because it's going to be critical to our ability to reopen. And that's why we want to make sure we set up these mobile locations, we hit all of the neighborhoods, and we make it easy for people to get tested. And this is another opportunity to do that. So with that, I just want to, again, thank all of you for your patience and your cooperation. We have come a long way, and I just want to appreciate how far we've come. There was a time where access to testing was very, very limited, and now we're at a place where we have expanded testing, and this is absolutely critical to reopening. There was a time when we were having discussions about requiring everyone to stay home, and now the pickup and deliveries and other things are available. We're going to have a conversation, as I said, this Friday about the options available for families, because I know that there are so many parents who are anxious to figure out what is going to happen for their kid this summer. We want to make sure that kids have, you know, a great experience. It has been challenging and will continue to be, but it's important that we make sure that there are options available. And so our goal is to have an in-depth conversation on Friday at 11:30, so I hope you'll tune in. And with that, I know Dr. Colfax has a update of where we are as it relates to public health overall, as well as some information, the latest on Laguna Honda Hospital. And so again, thank you all so much for your cooperation. And with that, I'd like to introduce Dr. Grant Colfax with the Department of Public Health.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. I'm Grant Colfax, Director of Health for the City and County of San Francisco. And again, I want to thank Mayor Breed for her leadership. And Mayor, it was just a great experience to have that conversation with you yesterday on Zoom, of course, about where we are headed in the phases of the potential phases of reopening and the key indicators we are going to be looking at going forward. So I'd really encourage people to watch that. It is available. It was recorded. I'll allude to a few of those points today, but if you really want more detail, please go to that conversation. And certainly we'll be sharing more information in the future as we move forward together. So as of today, as the mayor mentioned, there are 2,179 San Francisco residents who have been confirmed with COVID-19. Sadly, 36 San Franciscans have died from the disease. And again, my condolences to their family, friends, and community. And as we move into a new phase of our response and recovery, I would like to thank you all for doing your part. Everything that you have done has truly saved lives and slowed the spread of the coronavirus in our community. You have protected each other, you have protected your families, and you have protected your community. And most importantly, you have protected the populations that are most vulnerable to this virus, the populations over 60, people with comorbid conditions, who we know, both on our local data and from our national data, are unfortunately most likely to die from this disease. Today, there are 62 patients with COVID-19 hospitalized in San Francisco across our 9 healthcare hospital entities. And while this is an increase since yesterday, the curve has been remarkably flat for many weeks now and steadily declining since May 5th. Although, of course, and you've heard me say this many times, but I will continue to say it, this could change at any time, but we must acknowledge that big accomplishment that, again, all of us have made major contributions to. You have all been a part of this, and for this, I thank you. And let's continue to flatten and push that curve down together. We are certainly making this measurable progress in our fight against coronavirus. And because of that, we are starting here locally under the mayor's leadership and across the region with regard to the gradual process of reopening. Yesterday, we issued new health orders that allow curbside pickup for most retailers in the city. And we are taking steps in this regard with caution as our focus on community health remains a top priority. We will need to continue to watch for the effects of increased movement that this opening will bring. We know that before the shelter in place order went into place, the more we moved, the more the virus moved. And we are certainly hoping, based on the data, the science, and the facts, that as we continue to take the precautions necessary, the masking, the social distancing, the intense hygiene that I think we've all adapted to over these last few months. I don't know about you, but my hands are a little red from the washing, and I've used a lot of hand gel recently. But as we adapt, we are hoping that as we move more, we will not see increased movement and transmission of the virus. And remember, the virus has no timeline. And our new stay-home order reflects that reality. We are in the second inning of a long game. And most scientists expect that this long game is going to be with us for 18 to 24 months. So the new updated health order will allow for future expansion and the reopening of additional businesses, provided, again, we continue to flatten and even see a decrease in that curve. And again, the health indicators need to continue to look good. This new order doesn't have an expiration date so that we can act with maximum flexibility and not be penned in, literally, by artificial deadlines. And I have hope, and I think we should all have hope and good reason to believe, as I said, that if people continue to take precautions, we will continue to make progress. But at the same time, if needed, we will dial back. If that curve starts to go up, if we start to see indications that the virus is spreading in the community at an alarming rate. If our intensive care unit numbers start to go up, the hospitalization numbers overall start to go up, we will need to take a step back and decrease our activity in our community. I hope that doesn't happen. And again, the more vigilant we are in our preventive activities, the more likely it is that we will be able to make incremental but sustainable progress going forward. It will take resilience. It will require that we stay nimble. And it will require that we continue to monitor the evolving health situation. You know what I say here, using data, science, and facts. So in terms of our reopening phases, and I think we have a slide up to show this. This is the focus of our steps will be aligning generally with the state's plan that you see on this slide. We are currently in stage 2A, which is really, again, focusing on that, allowing curbside pickup. And then having the manufacturing and supply chains to support that curbside pickup in place. So again, this is just the beginning. And over the next period of 2 to 4 weeks, we will continue to watch the data to see if we can enter into that next phase, the 2B phase. Again, if things go well, we would then be over time moving into stages 3 and ultimately into stage 4. But this is, again, an iterative process. It's going to take nimbleism, and it's going to take a lot of vigilance on all of our parts. We are working locally with the Economic Recovery Task Force, the Office of Economic and Workforce Development, and the community, the business community, and other stakeholders to design smart ways, ways that are informed, again, by the science to help businesses come back while protecting public health. These things can go and will go hand in hand. We look forward to bringing the next steps together, and we'll continue to provide updates on this in this regard. And again, we will continue to study these indicators over a 2 to 4 week cycle, which will give us sufficient information to determine whether we can gradually open up into these next stages. So one of the key things we will be doing in this, the vital statistics, as it were, for this staging, is looking at the five indicators that I have mentioned before, but we have another visual for you to see here. As we move towards this reopening, the five indicators we are going to be looking at are cases, so number of COVID-19 cases, our hospital capacity, testing, contact tracing, and PPE, or personal protective equipment. The mayor mentioned these indicators earlier, and as I said at the beginning of my remarks, we had a very good conversation along with Dr. Susan Phillip, our communicable disease director in the health department, about how we will be determining and following these indicators as we go forward into these new phases. So again, I would encourage you to watch that session, and we will be coming back to these indicators during this next phase of reopening and onward. Many of these indicators are also represented on our data tracker, and so I would encourage you to follow along if you haven't already, particularly that hospital curve that I continue to look at every day. I know many of you are doing that. You can also look at our testing data. As the mayor mentioned, we have dramatically scaled up our testing over these past few weeks, and that information is again available on our website. So those are the slides, and I'm going to talk more specifically around testing in one of the most vulnerable populations in a setting in our health department, which is a Laguna Honda Hospital. And one of the most important testing expansions we have launched is to require universal testing of residents and staff at all skilled nursing facilities in San Francisco, including, of course, the largest skilled nursing facility in the region and one of the largest, if not the largest in the nation, Laguna Honda Hospital. I'd like to provide a progress report on how our universal testing is going at Laguna Honda Hospital, and we'll have final results next week on this. But we were, as we initiated the universal testing order, Laguna Honda was the first skilled nursing facility in the city to begin universal testing, and that started on May 4th. Resident testing, so the people who live in the facility, the residents, resident testing is now complete, and staff testing will conclude next week. So far, we have, of the approximately 2,500 staff and residents of Laguna Honda, we have completed screening, the universal testing of 2,087 people. So just in these in this facility alone, over 2,000 people have been tested, screened, if you will, tested on a routine basis because they either live or work there. This testing allows the hospital to proactively protect residents and staff from exposure by identifying COVID-19 cases among people without symptoms. And we know that many people have COVID-19. They may not show symptoms, whether it's because they don't show symptoms at all during the course of the infection, or whether they're in the early stages of COVID-19 disease. As of yesterday, 718 residents and 1,369 staff have completed the universal testing, and we've had just four positive results, two among staff and two among residents, as, again, a result of this universal testing. That is a less than 1% positivity rate for, in fact, I'll be very specific. I know I'm throwing out a lot of numbers around today, but it's a 0.19% rate. That said, with increased testing at Laguna Honda, we do anticipate additional COVID-19 cases. We know these institutions are highly vulnerable to infection with COVID-19, and while we are being extremely vigilant, we know that it is likely that there will be more cases. The key thing is that we do as much as we can to prevent cases, to detect COVID-19 cases when they are in the facility, either among staff or among residents, and then take aggressive action to limit the outbreak, and of course, care for both the staff and residents who are found to be infected. We have the people who have followed up, who have tested positive, excuse me, we have followed up with contact tracing and found, and so far have tested additional residents and staff based on the possible exposure from these four cases. This past weekend, that follow-up enabled us to identify a small outbreak in the South 2 neighborhood. These neighborhoods are historically been, you may think of them as hospital wards. It's a neighborhood because these are long-term residents, and certainly goes beyond sort of the traditional hospital ward, but it's an area of the hospital where residents live together and where staff work together. So we did identify a small outbreak on South 2 precisely because we implemented this universal testing, this universal screening process. We had found two cases there through the universal testing on that in that neighborhood, and case investigation led us to test additional contacts as a result of that. This additional testing resulted in four positive cases in residents who had previously tested negative. So again, because of our vigilance and repeated testing, we were able to identify four positive cases of residents who had tested negative before. This is an example of the systems that we have put into place working in the way that they should and in the way that they must, enabling us to take action quickly and to move quickly in response to testing results. Staff who test positive are immediately sent home to self-isolate and provided with supports, and residents who test positive are immediately transferred to the new dedicated COVID-19 unit at Laguna Honda, where all best practices and best medical care is provided. All staff and residents who have tested positive, I'm thankful to say, are in good conditioned, and we have quarantined South 2 and continue to monitor, test, and investigate contacts. So these new cases bring the total confirmed COVID-19 cases to Laguna Honda to a total of 29. Again, that's going all the way back to March 22nd, 11 residents and 18 staff. Several of these cases have fully recovered, and I'm thankful to say that the rest remain in good condition. I'm also thankful that to date there have been no deaths from COVID-19 at Laguna Honda Hospital. And I'm really just so personally grateful to the residents and the staff at Laguna Honda who have worked tirelessly to continue to contain the spread of COVID-19. This universal testing, which will now become routine at Laguna Honda, a huge lift, something that took really a great amount of investment and time, and I'm just so grateful to the leadership at Laguna Honda and the staff there, who are not only doing the work that they did so well before this pandemic, but now being resilient, being flexible, being nimble, and ensuring that they're continuing to take the best care for residents possible. I am proud of our work. Really want to thank the ongoing collaboration with the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and the California Department of Public Health. The improvements that we've made at Laguna Honda not only benefit the more than 700 residents at Laguna Honda and the workforce there, but we are also sharing what we learn with other skilled nursing facilities across the city. In San Francisco, approximately 40% of all skilled nursing facility patients and residents have been tested through universal testing to date. 5 facilities have completed universal testing, 4 are underway with our support, and the remainder are planned in the next coming weeks. So in conclusion, over the next weeks and months, we will continue to focus on vulnerable populations and expand universal testing to more congregate settings, including shelters. We will continue to focus on the 5 indicators that I and the mayor have emphasized. We will continue to work together with community, businesses, and other stakeholders across the region and coordinate with the state to accomplish as much restoration of activity as we can. And we know that the coronavirus is still here. But we are going to find a way to protect each other and enter a new era for our city, for San Francisco, for our community. We continue to rise to this occasion. And San Francisco, I can't thank you enough for your dedication to the entire health of the entire community, and I look forward to moving forward together. Thank you.
Good afternoon. The first questions are for Dr. Colfax. The first question is from Mel Baker, San Francisco Public Press. When will San Francisco residents and staff of all San Francisco's nursing facilities be tested for coronavirus?
So as I detailed in my remarks, this effort is is going well. I don't have a specific end date for you, but I can tell you that with our health order and with the aggressive actions that we are taking and supporting nursing homes across the city, I expect that it will be done soon. And again, this is an iterative process. It's not as though we do one round of universal screening or testing of all residents and staff, that this is a process that will be ongoing, because we again want to support the staff and residents and the nursing homes in early detection of COVID-19 to prevent it from spreading through these communities. I would also add that the health department is supporting many of these institutions. They haven't had the technical expertise, the capacity to test residents. And as we enter this new normal, one of the key things we're working with them to do with support and engagement of the state is ensuring that they make the investments necessary so that routine testing becomes part of their model as they support the communities in their nursing homes.
Next question is from Joshua Sabatini, SF Examiner. On testing at Laguna Honda, you mentioned there was an outbreak at South 2, but there was also an outbreak. Was there also an outbreak in North 4?
So that was a prior situation which has been contained. And again, I think in that earlier outbreak, one of the key things that we did was bring in our own infectious disease experts from the state and the CDC, who helped us provide the best techniques and monitoring efforts to contain the infection. That actually did contain the infection in that neighborhood. And so now we're using that evidence and those guidelines to mitigate the outbreak in this new neighborhood. And again, these lessons learned will be applied across nursing facilities, not only in San Francisco, but I expect across the state, if not across the nation. So this is hard work. It's challenging work. But as we expand our testing and our ability to care for people and detect the COVID-19 virus early, I'm hopeful that we will be in a much better situation than we would have otherwise been.
Since the patients who tested positive are outside of the initial outbreak detected in South 5, are you concerned about how widely the virus may have spread throughout the facility?
Well, this is exactly why we tested all the residents and why we're testing all the residents and all the staff. So you heard, this is exactly why we issued a health order to require this testing and, you know, needed to make sure that we were following our own orders, which is why we started with Laguna Honda. It's also a very large facility. You heard me say, you know, we found a relatively small number of staff and residents on that routine screening. But the system worked because we found a few, and then that helped us focus our efforts in a specific neighborhood where we were able to detect more cases and take aggressive control actions, as well as ensuring that the residents who tested positive, who were in good condition and might not have otherwise been detected, get the best care possible. So, you know, yes, I'm concerned that we need to be vigilant. And this vigilance is paying off in terms of ensuring that we're protecting the health of the residents and the health of the staff to the best of our ability, based, again, on the data, science, and facts.
The next question is from Ron Lynn, LA Times. Can you update us with the percent of people testing positive for coronavirus in San Francisco compared to the worst point?
So I think if you go to our data tracker, you can see the percent of people testing positive in our system of care. And that percent that tests positive varies depending on how testing is being scaled up, whether there may have been an outbreak at a facility or in a setting where there's likely to be more positives. What I think we really need to focus on in terms of, I think the gist of the question is how do we know that we're doing better? That's really best reflected in the hospital data. Those are the people who are living with COVID-19 who are the sickest. That's the curve that we really need to be looking at. That curve again is flat or going down. As we expand our testing, and I think this is a key point. As we expand our testing, we will surely detect more cases in the city, because if we test more people, we will get the numbers will go up. We will be watching that percent, that positivity rate over time. As of the last few days, that positivity rate has hovered around 7%.
The next question is from Janie Haar with the Associated Press. The governor floated the possibility of having live sporting events without spectators as early as June 1st. Is this any way possible for San Francisco?
Well, I think we need to, again, look at the data and monitor carefully, work with the sports business community, and determine whether that is something that could be done safely and commensurate with best practices. I can't speculate on a date, but I would say that I know many of us are looking forward to getting back to watching sports, and it's certainly something that we've been discussing.
The next question is from Trisha Thadani, SF Chronicle. Given SF's grim budget projections for the coming fiscal year, is the Department of Public Health bracing for big cuts to its own budget?
So look, we're in a situation where we have an unprecedented public health emergency, and we also have a major fiscal crisis. And we're looking across the department to figure out how can we accomplish the goals of ensuring that the pandemic, that our pandemic response is robust, while also looking at how do we continue to provide as many services possible for people in our clinics, in our hospitals, behavioral health services, and so forth. So we're taking a hard look of where we can make adjustments. I will give you a key example of where things have accelerated, for instance, because of the pandemic. Our telehealth work has accelerated in primary care and behavioral health services. So we're looking at how do we shift our response and whether there are commensurate cost savings in that work. So a lot of work to do going forward with ensuring that our budget goals are met, but also ensuring that our pandemic response and that our ability to provide care to safety net populations it continues.
Specifically, as a follow-up, specifically, should programs within the behavioral health care system, like drug treatment programs and mental health facilities, prepare for reductions in service they are able to provide?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that last part of the question? I couldn't quite
understand. Sure, I'll read it again. Specifically, should programs within the behavioral health care system, like drug treatment programs and mental health facilities, prepare for reductions in services?
So, I think it's too early to speculate on that right now. We are looking, again, at multiple factors that will help determine what our proposed budget will look like in the future. I think that certainly as we look at the intersection of the COVID-19 pandemic and the behavioral health challenges that we already have in the city, we will certainly be looking at what programs need to be supported that intersect with both the behavioral health needs and the COVID-19 response. And increasingly, as we enter this new era, one of the key things we'll be looking at across the health department is how do our services not only continue the strong work that we've always done in supporting health, but how do those intersect with our ongoing pandemic response? And those will be particularly services that we will particularly focus on adjusting and maintaining, and in some cases, I think, strengthening.
Thank you, Dr. Colfax. Our final questions are for Director Abigail Stewart-Kahn, Homelessness and Supportive Housing. Director Stewart-Kahn, your question is from Kathy Novak, KCBS. The mayor tweeted on Friday about the newest safe sleeping site and said the city is looking for more sites. What are the sites that are currently still being considered?
Thank you. So as the public mayor may be aware, and just thanks for the opportunity to revisit things that are happening for residents who are unsheltered on our streets. When the epidemic began, the Healthy Streets Operations Center, which HSH is a part of, paused encampment resolutions. This is because moving people into shelters was no longer possible, given that congregate sites are a difficult location for people during a pandemic caused by COVID. And so we know that this means that there are more people living unsheltered than there were before, and we know that even before the pandemic, we didn't have enough space for people. We also understand that in a crisis, people unhoused and housed want to be together, that community is what makes us feel safe during times of high anxiety. And so similar to the physical distancing that I need to create with my colleagues or people who are not in my close family, we worked through our HSOC partnership to provide education, outreach, access to hand sanitizing, access to sanitation, access to food, and we continue to work in an ongoing way with the unsheltered population. It's become extremely clear that that is insufficient given the number of people living unsheltered and how difficult it is to physically distance on our sidewalks. And so, as you note, Kathy, the mayor tweeted about the first sanctioned safe village in San Francisco. This is not something that the Department of Homelessness or the city has ever approved before, even though many, many cities across our country have done so. And this is really related to the pandemic and the need to provide safety for people living unsheltered during the pandemic. So to the specifics of that site, it opened last week. It is seen as a short-term solution. It is run incredibly well by Urban Alchemy with our deep gratitude and all of the partners at HSOC working together. The intention at that site via our HSOC partners is to move people out of it as quickly as possible, whether that is into our traditional housing, if they are housing referral status, or into a SIP hotel if they were known to our system of care before April 1st. And then to find other solutions and resolutions for other individuals so that that location does not remain long-term or even longish term. There is another location that has been identified that's been talked about publicly in The Hate, and we are looking forward to its opening in the next couple of weeks and to our partnership with Larkin around that site and their subcontractors. And so each site needs to be taken on a case-by-case basis based on the needs of the unsheltered individuals, the community input, and we look forward to that. The Healthy Streets Operations Center and the Emergency Operations Center remains point on evaluating and looking at future sites. For example, we are looking at a site to serve the Mission and the Castro districts, and we look forward to that partnership and the role that HSH will play. And other sites will continue to need to be evaluated based on the need in the community, community resident input, and the specifics of each location.
Follow-up question, how can local residents participate in discussions about the sites?
Yeah, that's a terrific question, and for those of you who know how we do our community process around navigation centers, you know that it is robust and it is extremely time-consuming before the COVID pandemic. And so we will not be able to do that significant. We can't come together in meetings, community meetings of 100 people and share all the details because we can't all be together. But I know that the Healthy Streets Operations Center and the Emergency Operations Center, as they look at each site, partners with local leaders, takes a look at the neighborhood, tries to understand how to mitigate the impact if, in fact, the site is important, listens to the residents, and reaches out as quickly as they possibly can for that engagement, understanding that given the crisis that we're in, we need to move in an expedited manner.
Thank you, Director Stewart-Kahn. That concludes our questions for today's PESH conference.
That concludes this special broadcast of a press conference on the ongoing COVID-19 crisis in San Francisco. This is KSFP-LP San Francisco. We now return to our normally scheduled programming.